right, welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast for people who make fine art out of needle and thread.
Yes, well done.
Our guest this week, now, she's a knitter, she sews, she stitches, cross-stitch, needlepoint, she's a mother, she's a musician, and she licks her thread.
She does all the things.
All the things. Caroline Haufa. Haufa?
Haufa, very good.
Haufa, should have practiced that more. Off the grid needle arts, and if you are a floss tube person and haven't run across one version or the other of off the grid needle arts, boy, you need to wake up, because, yeah. So we get to talk to Caroline about all those things, and then also the business she has, Evertotes, where we make tote bags, and most interested in that. Those look beautiful. Yep.
Thank you.
So, all right. So first, we got to talk about you licking thread. No.
I don't know. I think we need to have a Ivana versus Caroline discussion, a debate.
Yes.
Because you know, Ivana is the queen of the automatic thread licker. So,
automatic
you
thread
know.
Licker. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. It's habit. You know, it's just habit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not for me.
No, see, I fall onto the thread licking side. Every time it is quite literally habit. I don't think I could do it otherwise.
The only thing I don't do it with is tapestry wool.
Ew.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Tapestry
yeah,
wool that's is not pleasant.
So
but
gross,
you know, the
right?
eye on the needle for that is big enough that you don't have to. You don't have
right.
to lick.
You could just squish it.
That's right.
Yeah, that'd be kind of like
Talk
licking
about
a cat.
Fine arts.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, so I'm curious about, straighten out for me all of these. You have the high tea, you have your off the grid, your regular podcast or video, floss tube video, and then you do the Friday Stitch with Me. And then you also have your, was it Fiber Arts Friends? I have these written down. You'd think I'd look at them, and that way I would know. Fiber Friends.
Yeah, the Fiber Friends podcast.
Now you have a family. How do you do all of these videos every week?
Well, a lot of coffee, and, you know, I don't sleep a lot, and I just love doing it. I really love doing it. So the Fiber Friends podcast is sort of what started it all. And my friend, so I do that with my two friends, Adrian and Louise. And we came up with the idea about just over a year ago. We just celebrated our first podiversary. And Adrian had been trying to get me to do a podcast with her for a while before that. And I had resisted. And when we met Louise is a knitting teacher and designer, and Adrian had started dyeing her own yarn, and I was, you know, beginning to make bags and with my sister-in-law, and we thought, okay, well, the three of us, I think we make a, you know, we're really good friends, we get along really well, and we have a lot of fun, let's give it a try. And so Adrian was, you know, jubilant in the fact that she finally got me to agree to try it. And so when we first started, I said, I'd like to incorporate a little bit of cross stitching in with our chat, because it's important to me. And it's, you know, it's my first love. Knitting is secondary to cross stitch for me. But because there's three of us and there's so much chat and frankly, a lot of goofiness, it always sort of got left behind, and I never got to talk about it enough. So I started my own channel. I started recording floss tube videos because I didn't have enough time to talk about the stitching that I wanted to talk about, and it took off from there.
So you guys are basically like a rock group. They wouldn't play your songs, so you went on, you did a solo thing. Okay.
That's right.
Yeah.
They wouldn't talk about what I wanted to talk about. Okay. And they're both stitchers as well. They stitch as well, but for them, knitting is primary.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I've watched just a couple of those because, like I said in one of our exchanges, you and Christine are going to have to talk about knitting, because I know that two needles are involved and that's it. But I've watched a couple of those, and you guys are a hoot. You really have fun.
The other two can be inappropriate at times. I am always, of course, a lady, but it's three women getting together, and we're great friends, and we chat, and we just have a great time. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that ladylike demeanor that follows you everywhere. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I only let loose on the fiber friends. So.
Oh, okay.
Okay. That's what you say.
Everything else gets edited out.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's why we don't see it. I see.
I'm a lady.
Uh-huh. Okay. Noted. Got it right here. It's going in the description. She's a lady.
Lady.
Yep. Got it.
A fiber lady. It's our first fiber lady.
So what came first, the knitting or the stitching?
The stitching. When I was about 14 years old, my mother and I went to an exhibit at our local museum in the small town where I grew up. And it was, involving arts and crafts of, a few hundred years ago. And, I suspect there were probably samplers on display, though I don't remember specifically because I wouldn't have known what I was looking at. I know that there were antique toys. There were, those sorts of things. And then in the gift shop, there was a kit for sale, a small cross-stitch kit. And my mother purchased it for me. And she had done some simple projects in the past. She had done crewel work, and she also knew how to knit. She tried to teach me how to knit when I was younger than that. It did not take well. I did not have a lot of patience. It was like me trying to teach my daughter how to play piano. Sometimes mm-hmm. those sorts of things just don't work well. But the cross stitch, because there were instructions in the kit, in the pattern, I could sort of figure out what to do on my own. And that was it from there. So I was about 14 years old.
So you're effectively a self-taught, self-started stitcher. That's great.
Yeah, for the most part. And then, as I went on and we moved to London, and I discovered that there was a cross-stitch store in my town, that sort of opened up a whole new world of linens and different threads and classes on different techniques and just a whole new world of rabbit holes, and I jumped right in both feet.
Now, is this something that you did? You said you were 14, that you carried through school and the whole bit. I mean, is this something that you just kept doing on the side?
Yes. Yep. For the most part. I mean, maybe a month or two would go by where I wouldn't really do anything. So I would say probably in my early 20s is when, I would think I was in university, sort of in late teens, early 20s, that during university when I really picked it back up again. And it was my relief from studying. It was my relief practicing and just being able to. I was never one for going out. I was always a homebody. I loved being at home. I loved, being with my friends in a home environment. I met my husband when I was very young, so we were dating. So I wasn't really interested in a lot of the other things that many other people my age were interested in. I liked being at home and so pretty much straight through. I started knitting when I was pregnant with my first child with Sarah. And my mother-in-law taught me how to knit. And because you're on your best behavior and I was a lot more patient with her than I was with my own mother because I needed to be polite. And so she taught me how to knit.
Meaning you actually listened.
I actually listened. That's right. It's true.
Uh-huh. Now that's great. I think, of course, for me, a male in a male dorm at school, to do that kind of thing would have been, not good,
right.
on several fronts. But what? How nice to go through university with all the studies and to have that outlet to just shut your mind off and do something completely different. What a real plus.
It really was. Yeah, it always has been a bit of a refuge. So, yeah. Oh, I love it.
No, that's great. That's great. So mainly, I mean, because right now when I watch your stitch-alongs, you do some those very involved pattern type things for the most part, but at least that's what you've been doing lately. I haven't seen everything you've produced because, you know, I have a job and
and you produce a lot of videos. Yeah, I'm productive. Well, you know, it's interesting. I think it's all a matter of perspective. It's what you are used to doing, because I don't find them particularly complicated or overwhelming. You know, a lot of the things that I really like to do are just a few colors, you know, ink circles, or the modern folk embroidery mystery stitch along that I'm doing right now. It's one color, and you know, it's just like cross, it's regular cross stitch. If you can count, you can follow a grid, it's the same thing. The linen might be a little smaller. I'm using beautiful silk, but it's still all just cross stitch.
Yeah, that I have enjoyed watching your single color designs unfold, and they really are very nice. That blue thread that you got that somebody gave you, wow.
Yeah, that was quite a gift, actually, because Vicki Clayton no longer produces her silk, her hand-dyed silk. And my local needlework shop was one of the few places in I think maybe even the only place in Canada that sold it at the time. And so when my friend Kathy, the owner of the shop, had it in, it was a reasonable price for silk, and it was just great quality. And so I kitted up a lot of my projects at the time with it. And so now that I am, you know, a few years ahead and I'm trying to work my way through the stash, I have these, you know, luscious silks to use, but you can't buy them anymore. So when I started that modern folk embroidery with the silk that I had, the pattern designer Jakob contacted, we were discussing, you know, we'd been emailing back and forth about various things, and he messaged me and he said, you know, I actually don't think you're going to have enough. And so then I talked about that on the next Floss Tube episode, and a viewer messaged me and she said, actually, I have some, you know, why don't I send it to you, give it a try and see if it matches yours. And she did. So I did send her a little thank you gift in the mail. She should be getting it any day now. So hopefully that starts to make up for it, because yeah, it's beautiful stuff. Really, really nice.
Yeah, it's a striking color. And that's, you know, it's so sad when you have something like that and you know that what you have is it.
That, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then do I hoard it? Do I use it? What do I do?
You're right. Because then right. I would end up having it for 30 years because I'd be always saving it for the next project because, you know, well, that one's going to be the more special one, you know, and that's exactly how I end up with everything saved and never used.
Exactly. Right? And that's what Sunday High Tea is all about, is about pulling out that special thing that you're saving, because let's face it, we probably spent quite a bit of money on it, and let's use it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, but you're right. You know, you the whole time you're thinking, you're holding it in your hand, you think, if I use this, it better be good. And
it has to be something very special.
Exactly. Tick all of those boxes.
Are you stitching a lot during the day, or are you just fitting it in? I mean, you've got a lot going on in your life. How do you fit that in? Because I often ask that question to myself. I might get a half hour before I nod off at night. And so give me some tips. How do I fit it in?
Yes, it is. It's a struggle. I have a lot of things going on. I do work from home. So, you know, I have my teaching nights are scheduled in such a way that I have them, you know, it's spread out over two and a half evenings. And then I was doing the book work for my husband's business, retail store. And when Evertote started picking up, I quit my job with him. He let me quit. And then, so, you know, when do I stitch? I stitch. My favorite time is first thing in the morning. So I make that time. I get up when my husband leaves for work, and he usually leaves the house at about 6:30 in the morning. So I get up at 6:30, let the dog out, make my first cup of coffee, and then I actually crawl back into bed with my project. I stitch or knit for an hour, and that's my main time. And then it's time to, you know, get my son ready for school. I get him off for his day, and then I generally spend. Each day of the week for me is different. I have different tasks to do every day of the week. Sometimes it's teaching. Sometimes it's, you know, I have to put out the podcast. I have to, you know, sew a few bags. I do custom orders. A lot of time on, you know, talking to customers who want, you know, a certain size or shape, different fabric, social media. You know, keeping up with Instagram and the Facebook group. We have a very, very active Facebook group that's attached to the Stitch With Me Friday Off the Grid. And I think we've surpassed 2,100 members. And it is an amazing group. Really, really kind, amazing stitchers who are sharing constantly what they're doing. I don't know if you know what Friday Off the Grid is all about.
That was going to be one of my questions, because I joined that thing, and my feed is constantly what is with this group? They're always doing something.
The basic premise of this, and I can't take credit for the original idea. About 10 years ago, there was a blog called Let's Stitch, and the premise behind the blog was it was stitchers around the world who had blogs of their own would join in Friday evening, their time, 6 p.m. until midnight, and stitch for 6 hours. You would share progress pictures from when you started to when you finished. And then you would put a blog post up on your blog, and you could also post on this Let's Stitch blog. So when, you know, a few months ago, or actually, it was longer than that now, maybe 6 months ago, I started thinking about it again and how much fun it was, and the community of people online that I'd met. And the blog, I believe, is now defunct. I couldn't find it again when I went looking. So I brought it up on a Stitch With Me video that I did. And I said, why don't we start this? Why don't we make a Facebook group? And, you know, let's start this up again. So that's basically what it is. It's stitchers around the world. And we have members all over the world. So Australia starts to party way before we do. And, you know, everybody posts their pictures, and people party all week long. So that's why your feed is filled with stitching.
Now it makes sense. Because the party part was throwing me off, number one. I didn't get the party part. But then somebody's the other last weekend – last Friday, it's Australia. It's 6 o'clock. What is this? Okay, so it's 5 o'clock anywhere. Give me a drink. Okay.
Sort of. That's right. So put your party pants on and get your stitching out, and it's time for yourself to work on the project that you want to work on.
Well, that's a flat out neat idea.
I think so too. And I thought so 10 years ago. And so I thought, let's do it again. And we then had Ginger Gerald started a Saturday Stitch With Me video. So his is the Saturday Off the Grid after party. And Michelle Bendy Stitchy does one on Sunday. And hers is the Sunday Off the Grid Sunday brunch. And then we had Letitia, the crafty curator. She pops in. She's the party crasher, because she's not, you know, she can't do it every weekend. So when she can do one, she crashes the party. It's just fun.
It is fun.
It's just a lot of fun. A lot of stitching.
Yeah. Oh, that's clear. Yeah. That people are actually setting aside the time and pounding away with needles. That's yes. great.
And I think that's the key is that, you know, for a lot of us, it's making the time. And if you are stitching, then you're not doing something you're quote unquote supposed to be doing, like something for your family or work or any of those things. So this becomes, I've scheduled the time, you know, it's like scheduling a date night.
That's
I scheduled
right.
a date night with yourself.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
sometimes you have to do that in order to actually get that time.
Yeah.
So, and the fact that you've committed to other people sometimes makes it happen, you know, more regularly. So I really like this idea.
It's a lot of fun. And, you know, you start to recognize projects on
yeah.
the group. You start to recognize people and names. And, you know, everybody is just as excited about you having a finish as you are yourself. It's a pretty wonderful community. It's been really fun to watch it grow.
And I'm liking your basically an hour in the morning at the crack of dawn before anybody can get to you.
It's really a time that I've carved out for myself, and I've become very protective of it. It's also my son tends to come and sit with me as well. He's still he's just turned 10. So he's been doing it for the last couple of years. He'll crawl back into bed with me and he'll turn the television on and he'll watch a show and I will either knit or stitch and we just hang out together. So I'm hoping that that continues for a little longer. He is, you know, starting to not want to hang out with mom quite as much. but for now, it's been a very nice, special time for us.
That's a nice morning.
Yeah, it is. It's a great way to start the day.
Oh, that's terrific. Now, see, you got me thinking here, because that's been one of my frustrations, because we work at home, too, my wife and I, and mm-hmm. we've been doing it for a couple of years, and we've gotten into the, we're magazine editors, and we've gotten into this routine where we'll start at 8-ish, and we don't take a lunch, and then oftentimes we'll go out to get something to eat around 4 o'clock. We call it linner, because we haven't had lunch, so... And we just pound away through the day and then come back. And then usually we're tired and I'll get an hour in maybe of stitching and sometimes I won't. But to set aside that time and say, this is my time. I'm guarding it and I'm using it. That's, I think I need to try that.
It makes me a much nicer person.
Yeah. And I think that's the key is what you said before, is before anyone's had a chance to get to you. Because I know for me, once work starts and once, you know, email is open and my phone is turned on, my work phone, no matter where I am, whether I'm in bed still or not, that, you know, I'm on and
yes.
they're coming to get me. And once that channel is open and they know that, you know, my eyes are open, that's it. So,
yes.
you know, I like this idea of, you know, keeping it on mute and declaring yourself unavailable and then not starting anything else until you're ready. I like that very much. You know,
yeah.
it's like you said, just you're off limits for that time.
Yeah. No, it's pretty nice.
Yeah, no, I had that happen just this morning. I got a call. I had not opened up any email because I had editing I wanted to get done. It didn't get done. And someone called and she said, I just wanted to check on an email that I sent you last Friday. And I said, well, give me a second because I haven't even opened my email. Oh, she said, haven't started that little operation yet, have you? I said, no, I'm holding off as long as I can. And she wrecked it. And so then it was all over from there and the editing didn't get done. Yeah, no, it's exactly what happens. Yeah. And then next thing you know, it's the end of the day and you're exhausted and you've never accomplished anything that was on your list. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nope. No, time goes really fast. Now, I do find that the nights that I teach, I find that is very energizing. And so because I have to be really on and my students are back to back. And so I also tend to drink coffee while I'm teaching. And so I'm drinking coffee later at night. And so the nights that I teach, when I'm done teaching, I'm quite amped up. And those nights I find that I get a lot done mm-hmm. after I'm done teaching because I'm still very awake and I need to decompress a little bit. So yeah.
And those you are teach, good nights. Teach piano?
I teach piano and flute. I have a performance degree in flute, but the last few years, the majority of my students have been piano. I also coach an adult flute choir, and it's fun.
Our daughter yeah. Is a rather accomplished flute player, and so that's the one of many things since she moved out that I miss is for her. She's one of those A-driven students, you know, she did end up graduating top of her class because she's like that. But in the evenings, the flute was her escape. And yes. Yeah, and then so just about every evening, there'd be an hour or two, easily an hour, usually 2 hours of flute music. And I miss that. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It can be, and I know for especially my adults, for them that is what they use it for, and you know, it keeps them active, keeps them, you know, they have an activity to go to, they have practicing to do, and there's also a local band affiliated through the university, and a lot of you know, it's seniors and. Many of them are learning an instrument for the first time, and it's a phenomenal program. And many of, my flute choir, I'll give them a little shout out. Their name is, we're called Highfalutin.
Ah,
yeah.
So okay. My,
that works. Yeah. Highfalutin.
So there's five ladies and myself. And then, I think four of them are part of this band program as well. So.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Okay, knitting.
Knitting.
You learned from your mother-in-law, but you do a lot of knitting, and you've been doing a series teaching Ginger Gerald. And for those who don't know, Ginger Gerald is a floss tube person who does some designing and does the usual floss tube videos. But then how did it come that you were teaching him knitting, and therefore we now have a series of instructional videos on knitting?
Yes, Ginger Gerald and I started chatting a few months ago, and became quite good friends. And we were chatting. We tend to chat, you know, we message each other every day. And he watched a couple of Fiber Friends episodes, and he said, you know, I think I'd like to learn how to knit. And Ginger Gerald is the kind of person who when he wants to learn how to do something, he's going to learn how to do it right now, and he's going to make a, you know, Fair Isle steeped sweater tomorrow.
I don't know anyone like that.
So
Gary, do you know anyone like that?
I do know someone who lives on Long Island just like that. Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So mm-hmm. he is enthusiastic to the max, and it's a lot of fun, you know. And so I said, well, I can teach you how to knit. Why don't we do something fun with it? And that's how it all started. And he has just taken off. I think he's knit about 35 dishcloths, and he finished his hat. He finished his hat, and we just recorded a video together tonight. We're just about to start mittens next week. And everybody asks about socks. They all want to know when we're going to learn how to make socks, and socks are slated for early fall. So we'll get there, but no, it's been a lot of fun, and he's become a great friend. So
what's the deal with socks? It seems every time I read about knitting, not every time, like I read about knitting maybe once a year, but it seems like socks come up. Are those, why are they, it seems like they're the challenge of the decade. Is that?
I love socks.
Yes, knitting socks are fun. I mean, they're really fun because they're equal parts easy and then equal parts extremely challenging, because, you know, when you're on the leg or the foot, it's just round and round and round if you're just doing a basic, you know, vanilla sock. But turning the heel, doing a heel flap, whatever, however way you want to do a heel, and then doing the toe are challenging. And so you've got, and it's a small project. So you can finish it quite quickly. It's very satisfying, but you've got equal parts mindless knitting and challenging knitting all in one tiny little package. And they feel great on your feet. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're fantastic to wear.
And plus, getting to use all the self-striping yarns and things like that is fun. I think that's one of the more fun things for me.
Definitely. Beautiful yarns. Mm-hmm. You know, indie dyers are coming out with amazing stuff. And Adrian, you know, my best friend Adrian on the Fiber Friends is one of the, I adore her yarn. It's my favorite hand-dyed yarn. And that's generally what I knit my socks with.
Hmm.
So.
And is part of the challenge getting two socks that are essentially the same size?
Well, the very first pair that I knit went completely sideways, and I did have one totally the wrong size. It was twice as big as the first one, but you know, you learn and you learn what to do. And now I can generally make a pair. I've only knit a few pairs of socks. I only started socks 2 or 3 years ago, and it was Louise who taught me how to make socks. I'm a very cross stitch for me is about beauty and, you know, a gorgeous design, and I want it to decorate my house. Whereas knitting for me is very utilitarian, and I want a product from it. And I think that's why I have so many whips with my stitching, because it part of the, I'm a process stitcher. I love choosing the colors and, you know, feeling the fabrics and, watching the design come to life. Where knitting, I want to wear it now.
You want the finish.
That's right. I want the finish.
That'd be interesting. A process stitcher. I wonder if we sat down and categorized stitchers, what we'd end up with.
Right. Who likes to do the work and isn't really tied to the finish. And I think that would correlate with how many people are 98% of the way done with a project and then don't ever finish it. Because it's almost like that mourning process of, oh, this is done now, and I'm not going to be working on it anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, do you ever have that feeling? Like sometimes you're just like, oh, I just want to be done with this, and then I can do something with it. And then other times you've enjoyed being with that project for a while, and you're going to miss stitching that one, even though you know the next one you'll enjoy. You know, you feel like, oh, I liked this one. I wish it was going to go on further. So then you just don't finish.
Yeah, no,
not
you're
that I've ever done that.
And sometimes there's that little bit of letdown. You know, you've been working on this amazing thing, and then it's finished, and you look at it and you think, oh, well, I'm really going to miss you.
Yes.
Whereas the knitting, I just wrap it around my neck and call it good.
No, because I was thinking about this the other day, and I have no idea why, you know, where I would fit in. Because you see people who clearly all they do, not all, but 90% of what they do is buy charts and thread. They just love buying the next one. And you don't really see much stitching come out of them. And then, of course, you have the people who buy one and plow through it till it's done. And then there are a lot of people who it seems like they have a whole rack of them. Guilty as charged here, partially finished in one state or another. You know, I just wonder how many general categories you'd end up with of stitchers. Because we have, like in our Needlepoint Guild, we have one lady, I am absolutely convinced she has devised a way to automate stitching.
I mean, just, really?
Oh, geez. Every meeting.
Wow.
Every meeting, show and tell, you know, here's 8 or 10 things that not only did she finish, but she actually made them into something. It's like,
that's
oh,
amazing.
You gotta be kidding me. How do you do that? if I got half a project done in the last month, it'd be a miracle. And, and there are those people that they just churn them out like a machine. And I just wonder, you know, just was wondering the other day, what groups would you have? How many would you have that, And how many of us fit in a clean group or overlap a lot?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's interesting. And, you know, I find that those sorts of traits tend to come out in the Facebook group because it always starts a discussion. And then you'll have, you know, reams of comments about, you know, well, I do this and I do this and, you know, that sounds amazing, but I can't do that. You know, my recent question on Sunday Off the Grid was, you know, can you wear pajamas all day? And, you know, 80% are like, yeah, you bet. I'm there in my jammies all weekend. And there's that 20% of no way, can't do it. Makes me feel like I'm sick and I can't get anything done. I have to get dressed. So it's fascinating. But me, I'm definitely a process stitcher. I like the, but you know, in fact, we did have this conversation. I know we had it. I just can't remember where it was. It was either on the Facebook group or I brought it up on a FlossTube episode, which started then a discussion on the Facebook group about this very thing where I said I was a process stitcher. And then in the very next breath, I said that I couldn't give away my stitching because I had received some Christmas gifts of stitched ornaments that were amazing. And I was, you know, flabbergasted that somebody had gifted me. It was the one I was talking about was a stitcher from Australia. She's on Instagram, a creative curator. And she had gifted me this tiny, perfect little Christmas ornament that she had stitched. And I think I said something about it. I couldn't imagine giving it away. And I can because I have given it away. But I feel very Grinch-like when it comes to giving away my stitching, you know. And so someone left me a comment and said, you may be a process stitcher, but the very fact that you don't really want to give it away means that you do enjoy the finish. And that's true. I do love my finishes. So I guess I'm in both camps.
Yeah.
Hard to say.
And that's one of the great dilemmas too about the great discussion topics, giving as gifts your needlework.
Mm-hmm.
And
who do you give it to? Who is stitch worthy?
Yes.
Well, yes, who's stitch worthy, right? Because who's going to appreciate it, right? Because in your head, it has a value. It has the meaning, you know, it means something to you. You know what you put into it. You attribute a value to it. And to someone who's not a stitcher, like to give a piece of stitchery to another stitcher, you know that the person's going to get it and look at it and they'll appreciate it the same way that you do because they'll look at it and say, I know what it took to make this thing because if I had to make it, I know what it would take me to make that thing.
Absolutely.
But to give it to someone who is not a stitcher at all, you know, something that could have taken you 150 hours to do. And they're like, that's great. Thanks. And then, and you're like, wow, you
it's such a letdown. It's such a letdown.
Right. Right. Yeah. Because it's for them, it's about the finished product. It's whether that's an attractive thing or not an attractive thing. Whereas to a stitcher, that's a very small part of it, I think.
It signifies love.
Yes, it's this is how much effort I've put into it for you.
Don't you understand how much I love you?
right. And it's the difference, I think. So socks is a good analogy, though, because it's the difference between buying somebody a beautiful pair of cashmere socks and knitting them a pair of socks. And to someone who's a knitter, or who knows anything about knitting, to give them a pair of hand-knit socks, they'll know what it took to make those, and they'll appreciate them. Versus, you know, someone else who has no idea, you know, they'll look at them versus a pair of, you know, cashmere socks, and to them they're an equivalent because they're just a pair of comfortable socks. Then you do get that feeling of, wow, the thing that I was... Because what you're really giving them is your time.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yes.
It's just a symbol of your time.
And a lot of time.
Yes.
And thought and care and money. And, you know, quite often it's not cheaper to just buy the cashmere socks in the store.
No.
So, no, absolutely. So are they knit worthy or stitch worthy? And, you know, as you carry on, those people in your life become fewer.
So. Yeah. Well, I'm working on this reproduction sampler because it was stitched by a little girl who has our daughter Sarah Parr's.
Oh, that's a beautiful sampler.
And it is. And she visited here. She didn't know I was doing it, and of course I had it out on the rack. And she walked by. She said, And she saw the chart, because I'm not down to the bottom where the name is at. She says, that's my name. I said, yeah, that's why I'm doing it, because I found this from the early 1700s or 1800s, whatever it was, with your name spelled S-A-R-A-H and P-A-R-R. You know, that doesn't happen every day. And she looked at me like, well, that's interesting. And I said, and if you want it, it's yours when I'm finished. But I said, only if you want it, because if you don't, the investment in time to stitch this and to frame it, I said, I'll just keep it here and enjoy it for the reason I bought it. But I said, if you truly want it, you can have it. Oh, she said, I'd love to have it. Okay.
Oh.
Then, you know, yeah. Then it's yours. Yeah. Glad
that's
to give it
so
to you.
That's so nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
Oh, but, you know, it was that kind of thing. And I just thought, I'm just going to be right up front and say, you know, if you're just going to chuck this in a closet somewhere, then, you know, it's not going home with you. But if you want it and you're going to hang it up, then you can have it. You're more than, I'm glad to give it to her. Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. Absolutely. I knit my daughter a pair of socks. And when I gave them to her, she didn't wear them for a couple of months. And I finally said, you know, are you ever going to wear those socks? Because I did ask you when I was making them if you would wear them. She said, oh, but I didn't want to ruin them. And I said, I would rather that you wore them and ruined them so that I could make you more. Uh-huh. Because they're supposed to be worn. And she started wearing them. And in fact, the other day, because kids now, they wear socks with their sandals. So she put them on and she had a test at school. And she said, look, I'm wearing my lucky socks. And she had them on and her Birkenstocks, and I was tickled.
Yeah.
You know, I don't mind if she puts a hole in those, because at least I know that she is appreciating them.
And well, she now, wore them enough to put a hole in them.
That's right.
And now they're elevated to lucky socks, man.
That's right. Now they're lucky socks. Well, and she does know how long they took me to make, so
yeah. She
does appreciate them.
Oh, that's great. That's great. All right, now let's see here. Yeah, we got to move on to the next thing because we're going to run out of time. I got to learn about Evertotes, because those are some beautiful bags and pouches and things you make. How do we get started doing Evertotes?
Thank you. Well, my sister-in-law, my brother married a girl who, you know, if I couldn't have picked a better wife for him if he tried. She... You know, she's also a musician. She is a trumpet player, and she is a high school music teacher. And we are the best of friends. And she is also just as crafty as I am. She knits and sews and cross stitches, and she does everything that I do. So we've always gotten along very, very well. And a number of years, how long was it ago? A year and a half, 2 years, 3 years? I can't even remember. We had seen some box bags that were being sold, and knitters were using them as project bags for socks and things. And so we thought, oh, we should try to make something like that. And Kathy's always the one that sort of puzzles things out, how to do it, the math behind it, and how to put it together. And then, so she made the first one, and then she showed me how to make them. And so Kathy comes up to the cottage with me in the summer. Usually she spends a week or two with her daughter, Clara. And, you know, so we hang out in the summer. I live up there in the summer for a couple of months with the kids. And we just started putting these bags together. And then my husband, who has a retail store, he sells Apple products. And so I made him a laptop bag, and he really liked it. So we thought, well, maybe, you know, we should put a couple in the shop and see, maybe people would like them. And it kind of went from there. And, you know, the laptop bags, like we were talking about people appreciating them, It's hard to justify the cost of something like that when you're competing with products that are being made in, you know, overseas locations where the costs are you know, impossible to match. Yeah. They're a fraction. And these are, you know, these are handmade things that, that take a lot of time. And, you know, I buy my, we buy our materials in Canada. And so, you know, frankly, they sell, but I thought, you know, these laptop sleeves, this is an awesome project bag size. So it kind of went from there. And, you know, we did some with box corners for knitting and, you know, starting the podcast and I, we talked about it and I said, well, I certainly know a lot of stitchers and we can meet a lot of stitchers and I think they would think these were pretty great too. So that's how it started. And, it has grown quite a bit. It's, it keeps us busy. It's a lot of fun.
Do you see a growing appreciation for quality product like that as opposed to tote bags with a company label on it, all made in China?
I think I do, only because we have the right target audience. We have people who understand the value, just like what we were talking about with mm-hmm. being knit worthy or stitch worthy. Crafters understand that that these things take time to make. And, you know, someone may look at a bag and say, oh, well, I could make that myself. Well, sure you could. You could, it would probably take you this amount of time. And how much would it cost you to make? And, you know, and the thing is, crafters get it. Crafters understand. And so, yeah, I do think that there's, that the value is recognized.
Yeah. Well, and it's, I mean, you could trip over a cheap tote bag just walking out the door. And you know, like when you look, just even the pictures of yours, you can tell there, yeah, there's good quality fabric, sewn right, designed right, sturdy, going to last a while. And that's the other part. I think people are starting to realize that if you keep buying $2 tote bags, you buy a lot of them and pretty soon right, you'll come right. to realize I could have bought one good one. And, you know, it's like buying a good hat and, you know, 20 years later, yeah, it's still a good hat. Just.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, the thing is it's depends on your budget too, right? I mean, if it's I've always felt that you do what you can afford. And if all you can afford is a $2 tote bag, it works as a tote bag. And that's great. Just like if what you can afford is the lesser expensive Aida or flosses, you're still stitching, right? And so if you can afford the nicer things and that's how you choose to spend your money, then you've got sort of the Rolls Royce to have your project in and nicely organized, neat and tidy. And
a lot of time spent selecting cloth. I mean, is that the fun part? Yeah. Okay. That's the fun part for you. Okay.
That is the fun part. Yeah. That's the fun part. Yeah. I love choosing fabrics. And what's really great about doing this with Kathy is that, you know, when you have two people with different styles and tastes in what we like, we tend to buy fabric that we would want in our stash. And so that makes, you know, it, with the two different styles, we tend to be able to cover what lots of people would like instead of just what I like or instead of just what she likes. Bringing that together, there tends to be, you know, a little bit more variety in the types of fabrics that we like. So, no, that's the fun part. I'm always running out of lining. I never seem to buy enough lining fabric because I'm so drawn and shiny nickeled by the main fabrics. You know, you'll get into making, you know, 10 or 15 bags and think, oh, well, I didn't buy enough lining. So off to the shop I go again. So I spend a lot of time at the local fabric shop.
I'm sure they love you.
Yeah. That's fun.
Well, yeah, because you have a local fabric shop and then unfortunately your local needlework shop closing. Or maybe they're already closed. That's a big hit to you. Yeah.
They had their last day on Saturday.
Oh.
Yep.
That's so last sad.
Just Saturday. They retired. So they were able to close the shop on their own terms, and they have just worked so hard for the last, you know, 20 years that it's a well-deserved retirement. So I'm happy for them, and they've become really good friends over the years. And I know that they were ready to retire, and I wish them the best, but I am going to miss that meeting place and being able to pet everything and, you know, roll around in the fibers before you make your selection. So
that's too bad. No, too bad. Someone didn't pick that up and keep it going.
Well, I have heard, I've heard rumor that that we may be having a shop opening up. There is a local needlework shop in Ingersoll, which is about an hour from London where we are. And I've heard rumor that they are expanding their shop to a London location.
Oh.
But as to when that's going to happen, I'm not exactly sure. And I have never met the owners of this shop. I don't know anything about, I've never even been to their shop in Ingersoll. So that's all I know about it. So at the moment I'm spreading rumor and innuendo.
Well, that's always fun, you know.
Why not? Always fun. But I have heard that. So, and I believe they posted something on their Facebook page, but they haven't given a location or I don't believe a date or anything like that. So we'll see.
Well, it's good to hear a shot. You know, if they are going to open a second shop, that's good to hear because the trend these days is usually the reverse. So
definitely.
Yeah, we have a new one opening not too far from us. They're, this is, when are we recording? The 30th of April. They're opening the first weekend in May, and pretty excited. I'm going to try and get up there and see what's going on because, you know, to just open a shop, and this one they're doing from scratch, you know, that's a bold move, and I wish them all the, you know, all the success because we need those shops. We need them everywhere.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
No, brick and mortar is not for the faint of heart. My husband and his partner have run their business for the last 26 years in London, and small business and retail stores are, you know, it's blood, sweat, and tears. And, yeah, you know, so running Evertote online has been a phenomenal experience for me, you know, being able to meet people all over the world, you know, sending bags to Australia and, you know, the UK. And I would say the majority of our sales are outside of Canada, which has been really, really interesting. And, you know, because I can look at the demographics of who's watching the videos, my viewership is also, it's surprisingly, mostly United States. Mm-hmm. And that's where most of my bags go. Mm-hmm. Our bags. That's where most of our bags go. So it's interesting. You know, the face of retail is changing. So yes, brick and mortar.
Yep.
I wish them all the best.
It's a tough world. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just so people know, those bags available on in your Etsy shop.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, Evertote.com.
Just in case somebody might want to buy a bag.
Oh, they're beautiful. And the fabric choices are so nice.
Thank you very much. Well, that really is the fun part, is putting them together and dreaming up the combinations. And, you know, the sewing is pretty fun, too. We love it. We just love doing it. So
we have where you record. Is that your needlework sewing studio?
That is my sewing space, yes. When I believe it was almost a year ago, my husband helped me set up half of our living room into a sewing space. And I've set up all of my craft supplies are in there. So all of my yarn, all of my fabric, ironing board, cutting table.
You just made a lot of people really jealous. You know that, don't you?
I took over half the living room, and it's a fantastic space. I've got great windows in there. It does make, I need some better lighting for the videos, but it is what it is. I'm not a professional videographer. I'm just sharing my love of cross stitch. So I do record right in the same spot.
Well, that's great.
But you know what? I use the whole house. I have a stitching spot upstairs. I stitch in bed. I stitch in the kitchen. You know, I'm up in my teaching studio right now, recording this, and I'm looking around and there's a knitting bag right beside me. So I obviously knit up here as well. All over the house.
Well, Christine's been stitching this entire time, so you might as well have been knitting.
Yes.
I thought maybe the needles might be a little noisy.
Ambiance.
Ambiance. Exactly. Yes. Those are comfort sounds for us.
Yes.
So what are you stitching? What are you working on?
A big needlepoint piece.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
You're not done with that yet?
What was that about paying job, Gary?
Is this the Debbie Raleigh one you're still working on?
It is. Yeah, it's the Black Magic. So it's black canvas.
So cool. It's so cool.
It is. I like
black canvas. Wow. Mm-hmm. You must need good lighting.
Yes, very good lighting and very good eyeglasses.
Yeah, the police have stopped twice. They thought she was growing marijuana, so yeah.
Well, it's you talk about stitching in the living room. Every time we I'll sit in the evening with my husband and I'll say, "Oh, I'm gonna stitch." And I immediately see his eyes twitch because he knows the light is going on.
Oh, yes.
And we figured out that I have to sit on the other side because the light, you know, I have to angle it away because otherwise and I've done this. I've turned it on and sat in other parts of the living room and realized that, wow, that's not pleasant for anyone else.
I have mine on top of my headboard in our bedroom. And
yeah.
John has to face the other way when he goes
exactly.
to sleep. Because otherwise it just keeps him awake.
I think I'm going to have to make a shade for it.
That's not a bad idea, actually. They're awfully bright.
They are. And if I can put a shade, then it'll just, you know, it'll be directional light, which is really all I need. And then it won't be as jarring to everyone else.
Not a bad idea.
We have to ask you about that big piece of tapestry you bought, where the lady passed away.
Oh, yes.
That thing is stunning. That's, wow, what a project.
Believe it or not, that is actually one of three. There were three canvases that I purchased at the time. And the one that I chose to start working on was the one that the lady herself had started. And so she had stitched the bottom quarter of it. These are Beth Russell tapestries, William Morris designs, and they are a painted canvas. And so I have done a Beth Russell tapestry before, but I did it from one of her books, and I used Penelope canvas, and I bought DMC wool to stitch it. So it was a little bit different than these ones. These ones are smaller canvas with the print, you know, right on the canvas, and it's smaller. It's the Appleton wool, so it's the proper UK wool that comes with the kit. I mean, they're phenomenal, gorgeous kits, and I was very fortunate at the time to have the opportunity to buy them.
And you got all the wool, the whole shooting match.
The whole shebang.
Wow. Oh.
Wow.
And they sat in my closet. I think I was, I know I was. I was slightly afraid of them. And finally, I thought, you know, because it when you're looking at the color keys and, you know, the shading on these painted canvases is so subtle in the leaves. And there's, you know, five different types of leaf. And are you choosing the right group of color numbers to do the stitching, and should I do basket weave or should I just go back and forth, and should I use a laying tool, and should I, you know, all of these questions that come up. And I, you know, fortunately on the Stitch With Me video, when I was doing it, I sort of talked myself through all of these things. And then, you know, because there's such a wealth of knowledge in the people who watch, everyone was writing in with comments about how they do it, or, you know, try this, or have you tried a needle trolley? Have you, in fact, I have, there's a lady in the States, Pam, who is actually sending me a needle trolley to try. she had an extra one, and she's sending it to me. So you know what? I've never tried a needle trolley. I've tried a laying tool. It wasn't really for me because I like to stitch two-handed, and I found it very awkward. So I decided against basket weave because I really struggle with knowing where to go when, you know, the color is sort of all over the place in a leaf and not knowing where to take that stitch for basket weave. I'm not proficient enough at it. Going back and forth seems to work for me. I don't pull my tension really, really tight. I have it on a frame, so it's stretched. I did tighten my tension a little bit from when I did the Stitch With Me video. Someone had suggested that would help with, you know, potential warping of the canvas.
Yeah.
So, but no, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous piece.
Well, it's a tremendous find, that's for sure. That's, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I scored. Big time.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Yep. All right, Caroline, we're going to have to call it here. We're going to have to call it. This has been a lot of fun.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yes, really enjoyed it. So Off the Grid Needle Arts, and now I understand Friday night I'm allotted 6 hours of stitching.
6 hour party.
Yeah.
You put on your party pants and grab your coffee or whatever you like to drink and stitch away.
Well, I don't have party pants, but I can certainly find something to drink. That's not a problem. So, yes. All right. Thank you, Caroline. Appreciate it. Really
Thank
enjoyed
you.
It.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
And we'll be back on Wednesday.
Take care.